Netflix cancels shows, burns cash, and impresses investors. WhatsApp is partially blocked in China, and Google Glass is back, but for people who do real work. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1812, recorded Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/TNT and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know about technology today. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out this week, but joining me today is Scott Johnson from the Frog Pants Network. Hi, Scott.
Hi. It's always nice to be here with you, Megan. I'm surprised for the episode 1812 you guys didn't play the 1812 Overture. It's a missed opportunity.
I know. It is. I am sorry we didn't. If you could just hum a few bars, would that be okay?
Is that how we're going to fix this? Yeah. I think it'll get worse. But, you know, it's the only time you're ever going to really be able to sing that song or play it. And it's open source. Well, not open source. It's free to the public to use because there's no copyright on that crap. So you should have done it.
Well, you know, the edited version of this comes out. So maybe we'll run it along underneath the whole show while we talk about the tech news.
Sure, why not? Just put it on repeat when you put the podcast version up and that'll be all anyone gets.
I believe I hear a bit of it. Brian's down some. All right, thanks, Brian. Shall we talk about the news? This is a good intro to this is kind of how I feel about Netflix earnings today. They are still impressing investors with revenue $2.785 billion in the second quarter of 2017, and Netflix's seemingly endless parade of new subscribers, 5.2 million new customers in this quarter. Netflix shares are at an all-time high, which means the company is now worth more than Time Warner, Sony, and Fox. In its investor letter, Netflix says they're still burning lots of cash, and they will for several more years, and investors are just fine with that, too. So good day for Netflix.
Yeah, I wasn't it just a, I don't know when the Cannes Film Festival was, but we were just hearing about how annoyed the rest of the film industry is with Netflix and how frustrated they get that Netflix has picked up the way it has and continues to grow the way it has. And less people going to theaters means less revenue for those theater chains as well as the studios themselves. And a lot of finger pointing at Netflix lately. And I thought when I was hearing all that finger pointing, I'm like, this is a sign of something more than just, oh, isn't it annoying that Netflix is disrupting this age old industry. And I think that's what we're seeing with these earnings. I mean, we're basically seeing real-time disruption and valuation well above what people expected and no sign of stopping. So if I were the entertainment world that is still doing things not the Netflix way, I would be A, concerned, or B, working really hard on how I plan to compete with them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, because as we were talking before, you know, HBO has like a slightly different model with releasing their shows once a week. And do people like that or not? Do you know, if you can binge watch something, are you more likely or less likely to watch it? And does that matter? I mean, this is the first time we've heard that any of their big shows have been canceled, The Get Down and Sense8, which people liked, but apparently not enough people, and they were really expensive. And you know, we thought, is this a bad portent? But I think Reed Hastings on the investor call said something, you know, which is pretty cliche, but probably also true, that if you're not failing, then you're not trying hard enough. So I guess if you're creative, that makes sense. You know, just you want them to shoot for the moon. You don't want to have the idea that Netflix is like, well, you're already subscribed, so we'll just put a bunch of stupid stuff out there because we've already got you.
The positive spin on that, too, is in Sense8's case especially, that show would not exist on any other network. There's no way that thing gets picked up anywhere based on the season and a half that I watched. And the reason I think that is varied, and we don't have to get into it here, but but I think it was a risk. And Netflix is letting creators take risks. And I would say that Orange is the New Black is a risky show that would not be a show you'd see elsewhere. They've been able to do this kind of across the board with various bits. They've even taken stuff like that Kimmy Schmidt show that NBC decided to pass on, and they turned it into a bona fide hit on Netflix. So it's hard for me to poo-poo on them when they are giving real chances to real creatives to make good content. Now, we've got a couple of examples where they didn't perform to expectations and couldn't justify their budgets. But I think that's a pretty good track record so far, and it's better than nothing. I don't think either of those shows would have had a chance without a Netflix in the mix somewhere. And there's a million other categories like stand-up comedy and documentary and other stuff that gets a chance on Netflix that wouldn't see the light of day anywhere else. So in a weird way, it's a positive that we're finally seeing that. It's a maturation process. So we kind of know what the thresholds are. But Netflix has been willing to let people take creative reins, make the things they want to make. And if they hit with people, great. And if they don't, well, you know, what do we expect them to do? Milk them forever, regardless of profitability? Probably not.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying, except for that it wouldn't be seen anywhere else, because Amazon also has tons of cash that they're throwing at creatives, and they're showing a lot of stuff that wouldn't be anywhere else as well. So, I mean, that they have a competitor there. And when you think about all the other places that Amazon has its hands in, you know, I do think that is an advantage for them, because, you know, they're killing it in cloud and, you know, now they're buying Whole Foods. And so, or do you think that's a disadvantage because they're so wide ranging, and where Netflix is just like, we're going to create content and then let you stream some other content that we make deals with?
Well, there's a window. I agree with you 100% on this. And I always forget to mention Prime, because Prime Video has been able to do things that we didn't see coming. We didn't know that they'd be able to do as well as they have done in the short amount of time they've done it. I use it almost equally as I do with Netflix. So there's a lot of, in this household anyway, a lot of use of Amazon Prime. And, you know, Bezos wants to own and do everything. And that's cool. And they've got the cash to do it. And I totally get it. But where they may have an advantage here, they have to take advantage of it quickly, though. Netflix seems like, and again, it's just perception, I don't have any numbers to back this up, but they seem like they are less inclined to make contracts for film and television from other providers, creators, you know, whoever, studios, and they'd rather focus on their own original content. It seems like Prime is in no mood to lose the advantage of having other people's content. In fact, they make special deals constantly with HBO and Showtime and everybody else with these sort of add-on services for less money than you would pay in a cable situation to add it onto their Prime accounts and get those premium channels and the content they make. They seem to be going out of their way to make sure they secure archival and other people's content, as well as build up their own original content. And that, I think, may be what wins the race at the end. As much as we all love original Netflix content, I don't like it when huge shows leave. I don't like it when MASH gets pulled out of there, when they took Futurama down or Bob's Burgers or any of these others who've recently moved, some of them to Hulu. It was just announced. And Hulu's a whole nother wrench in the spokes. But I like that Amazon seems to still want to go after the old stuff or the other stuff we want, not just their original. So I don't know. It's like they're all taking slightly different tactics here. And in the end, I feel like maybe Amazon's might be the one I'm most interested in as a viewer.
Yeah. And I mean, but it's true that these, like you said, these services are able to do Netflix and Amazon, even though they're going at it a little bit different. They are able to show so much content that the networks would never have touched. I was thinking about that because I'm a huge fan of Aziz Ansari and just finished Master of None on Netflix. And then we're also rewatching Parks and Recreation. And, you know, Parks and Recreation is a great show, but he has such a small part in it, and it's hardly ever about, you know, his race or anything. And here's the show that Master of None, which has a wide appeal, but is really just, you just never would see a show with an Indian main character on any of the networks until now, where there's just more room.
Yeah, that's genuinely funny. So opportunities for smaller projects, weird projects, strange or unusual projects, or projects no one's even thinking about, they get to see the light of day because of it. So we really are in the center of this embarrassment of riches time. And I know we've been talking about it for years, but in light of these earnings reports, it feels like the light has never been brighter in this regard. At some point, we're going to start to see chinks in armor that we don't know are there yet. And I don't know what that is or what that means, or every company hits some kind of weird roadblock eventually. maybe Netflix's was years ago when they were going to do the video game rental thing, and they had all those plans to like the way they were going to split up stuff, and they scrapped it all and changed their mind. Maybe that was their roadblock and they're okay now. But I always want to wait for that shoe to drop, because right now it is like the best time. If you are into like anything, genre television, drama, comedy, doesn't matter. The choices are ridiculous. And I don't know when that ends. Maybe it never ends. Maybe, you know, maybe when I'm old and gray, I'll be wondering what, you know, HoloCube I'll be running that afternoon. I don't know.
I knew someone was going to prove me wrong about the Indian character on TV. And thank you, Web4205 in the chat room. The Mindy Project was on ABC. So, yes, thank you very much. I was wrong. But let's move on. The New York Times reports that WhatsApp is the latest service to run up against media censorship in China. The government disrupted service of the Facebook-owned messaging tool today, blocking users from sending photos and videos. The filters in China's Great Firewall have become more stringent due to events in the country, such as the death of Chinese dissident Liu Xiaobo, who died in a detention center, and more people are turning to WhatsApp in search of news that's not controlled by the government in Beijing. So for now, if you're in China, you'll be able to send photos and videos with WhatsApp only if you use a VPN. And the Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, has often spoken out when WhatsApp has been blocked in countries such as Brazil, but he has not responded. Facebook has not responded to requests for comments from any journalists that I could tell on this particular issue. So WhatsApp in China, what do you think, Scott?
Oh, man. I've had a recent relationship. I'm in a relationship right now with WhatsApp, it turns out. I kind of marked it off a long time ago. Why would I need that? I'm either using SMS or, you know, Twitter direct messages, or I've got a million other ways to Slack or Discord somebody or whatever. And it was starting to feel a little overwhelming, so I wasn't very open to some of these ideas. Here's the problem, though. I work with people in France and all over Europe, and people in Finland and the UK, and all of them are using WhatsApp, like all of them. So, yeah, I could get them through other methods, but as I realized they were all on there anyway, I said, well, all right, fine. And I downloaded the desktop app, including the phone app and all that, and started using it. And now I kind of prefer it over almost everything. The reason I say all of this is I think WhatsApp is for real. Like, I think it's like, how do I put this? There's a not gimmicky thing happening with WhatsApp that I like. It's just, here's the features it has, and it's very efficient at those things. And I'm not surprised at the uptake. I'd forgotten that Facebook owned them, to be honest. I keep forgetting who owns who, because there's WhatsApp and then what's the other one?
WeChat.
I always get those two mixed up. Obviously, they're not the same thing, not even remotely. So other than that, they're chat apps, but they're not owned by the same people or any of that. So to the whole point of the article about China, I don't know. That's usually a sign something's succeeding. If something's working, China bans it. If something's big enough, China bans it. When Zuckerberg or others don't speak out right away, it's because China's a really important market and they don't want to rattle those sabers too much because they have other ideas of things they can do in China, although Facebook is generally speaking not loved by the Chinese government. But they don't want to limit their options over there. So I guess I'm not surprised that there's been less reaction than there, say, would be in Brazil or some other part of the world. I kind of wish we could all just realize that people are going to talk no matter what. So if you shut WhatsApp down, they'll find something else. They'll shut that down, they'll find something else. Like, love always finds a way is one way of putting it.
Or, so, yeah, anyway. Jurassic yeah. Park, life always finds a way. China always finds a way. Or, you know, you were saying the other way around, that we'll get something else in there. I guess, I mean, WeChat and WhatsApp have a long history. I know WeChat, they tried to buy WhatsApp and Facebook bought them instead. And now, I mean, WeChat has less privacy. So anyone who really is concerned about their privacy was using WhatsApp instead of WeChat in China. It is hard. I mean, Facebook, Instagram, like Twitter, Google, they're all, Gmail, all blocked in China. And, you know, I think someone in the chat room, and it scrolled by, so I forget their name, but said, you know, the Chinese government isn't that much worse than a lot of other governments. A lot of other governments would do the same if they can. And so, of course, that is absolutely true. But the reason why we're talking about it is there are so many people in China, and these companies need to get into China. I didn't bring this up in the Netflix story, but that's what they want to continue. That's part of their how they will succeed to get into Asia, which they haven't, you know, to get into China, which they haven't figured out how to get into. I don't think they're in Asia at all. But I mean, it's true that, yes, I am concerned with the way that censorship and human rights are all over the country. But in terms of the tech story here, China is really important because we want to get in there. And by we, I mean, big tech companies want to get in there.
Sure. Also, you know, it's impossible to ignore them. They're China. They're huge. They have a seventh of the world's population. It's a growing market in ways that is astronomical. There's, I understand, you know, it's like squeaky wheel gets the grease. This is one big wheel with a lot of squeak and a great deal of grease that people need to grease it. And so it's a bad analogy, but they are, you can't ignore it. In other words, it's impossible to say, now hold on, let's make sure we remember, this some small tiny African nation that also banned WeChat, and let's talk about them in the same context. You can't. It's not possible. Over 1 billion people live there. Like, to these tech companies, it matters to them where their footholds are. And if they don't have one there, that's going to be bad for them because somebody else will. Now, it may end up in the end that none of us do and only Chinese companies are allowed to have any sort of foothold there, but that stuff will work itself out over time. I'm fully confident, as history is often a rising road, there'll be a day down the road where we're using a lot more Chinese stuff. They're using a lot more of our stuff and stuff from Europe, and we'll all be getting along much better than we do now. But Facebook wants to be in there, whether we like that or not. That matters to them. They would like to have a portion of those billion people using their services.
Mm-hmm. And I'm with you on WhatsApp as well. I didn't really use it. I had installed it. And then Colleen, who's our supervising producer, she went to Paris. And I felt like I needed to, I regularly use iMessage with her, and I couldn't break that habit. So she told me that I had to use WeChat, WhatsApp. And I like it. It's not messy. There's not a bunch of, you know, stuff like Facebook Messenger, and it's not, you know, all stickered up like iMessage. I like it.
Yeah, Facebook Messenger, I swear, they just need to pass it in front of somebody who understands UI and knock it off, because that thing is it's like word vomit. I hate it. I can't stand using it. And WeChat has this nice, clean, simple, what I want interface. And every time something changes in the world, people are doing stories on Snapchat and now Instagram. Hurry up, Facebook, and put it in your Messenger. And it ends up being implemented sloppy and it looks kludgy. And I don't know where I'm actually looking when I open that thing. I just recently purged my Facebook friends list. Sorry, everybody. Aww. But I was accepting friend requests from anybody. And it was like 4,000 or 5,000 people requesting. And I finally said, this is dumb. I'm not using Facebook the way Facebook was intended, the way Zeus built it. So I got to not do this anymore. And I went through manually. I can't believe I did this. But manually, late at night, every day for a few days, I went through and deleted everybody I didn't have some kind of personal relationship with and got them out of there. Man, Facebook's a lot easier to use now. Like, it's actually usable now. It's not just a big giant nightmare bomb. But I'll tell you, as much as Messenger is a way I talk to a number of people, including my mom and my sisters, that thing is a nightmare. So WeChat wins in that regard as well. The hard part is install base. It's really hard for me to convince my mom and my sisters to move to something like WeChat because they're all using Messenger. So it's frustrating.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, Google announced new security features for G Suite and AppScript to protect against the phishing scams like the one that we saw back in May. In case you forgot, the worm in May spread when a malicious hacker was able to create a viral plugin called Google Docs. Google says they've changed the way they handle plugins with a new unverified app screen that will appear for a newly created web application and app scripts that require verification. The pop-up comes before the permissions consent screen, so you can think twice before entering your credentials. You also have to actually type the word continue. It won't let you. You have to type. See, I think if you're watching the video now, you can see you have to type the word continue, which I think is genius because that means you're actually reading you're doing, because I know a lot of us just like yes. I didn't get scammed by that. I don't even think I got it, because I might have gotten scammed, but I am pretty careful.
My wife got it. She knew what it was because I warned her. My mom got it and did it, and so we had to chase that all down and deal with it. So yeah, I saw some people get hit with it. It's funny. It's like they're they're taking an old trick that World of Warcraft uses. If you go into that game and you've got eight characters and you want to delete one of them, you can't just delete them. You have to type the word delete so that some script can't come and just wipe out all your characters. And, you know, if you're into that game, that's a lot of invested time and effort and money and everything else. So you have to literally in caps type the word delete for that, for them to confirm that. And I like that. That seems like a bot behavior you could probably replicate at some point. But I'm always happy to see Google and others implement things to take care of this stuff. I mean, that was pretty nasty. That phishing scheme was, in all my time in tech, as many decades as I've been in this mess, I'd never seen anything quite like it. It was the most convincing, frustrating, irritating thing I'd ever seen outside of viruses that would just eat your hard drive and kill your computer back in the late 90s. And so, yeah, anything they can do. Thank you, Google, I guess.
Well, they strengthened the developer registration systems back in May. Right away, that's what they did. So it was harder to be, you know, to be accepted. And then this is only for new apps. So if you are a developer and you have an app, make sure that your contact information is updated, because they said that they're going to be contacting you soon to confirm that your app is verified. And yeah, so it's, yeah. Thank you, Google. I say thank you, Google, too. Business Insider says Google Assistant on the iPhone has only been downloaded 300,000 times since its launch 2 months ago. The data comes from App Annie, and Google declined to comment on its accuracy. But if it is true, I say your loss, everyone who hasn't downloaded Assistant. I use it every day. It's amazing. It's literally only one more tap than Siri. I don't have my iPhone here with me because I had Georgia Dow on the show yesterday, and she pointed out, how far away is your iPhone? And I realized it was right here. So I thought, I'm not going to bring it today. But do you use Google Assistant on the iPhone?
I do. I do quite a bit. I use it on the desktop as well. In fact, I use Voice Assistant over my browser all the time. I like it a lot. The truth is, the things I use voice assistants for, whether it's the Echo or my phone or whatever, if it's Siri or whatever, most of what I use it for is, you know, add a calendar thing or check my calendar, or I need to save a note for later, or set an alarm for an hour from now, or that kind of stuff. It's real rudimentary. It's pretty rare that I'm looking for really specific information. So I think I'm a kind of a bad use case for this stuff, because in that case, all of these voice assistants work great. I don't have any problem with any of them. Siri does that stuff fine. Cortana does that stuff fine. All of them do fine. Probably more than anything, I use the Amazon Echo for most voice command stuff that I do. All of that being said, there's more to it than that on the iPhone, and I like that app a lot. So yeah, I totally use it. But I'm not surprised that there are less of them. First of all, they don't really push it or market it much. That's not really Google's way. They just sort of put apps out and people use them or they don't. And you're talking about a device that has an integrated part of the system marketed voice assistant in Siri that is just there. And I think that's a huge advantage for Android, because Google Assistant is there. And it's the first thing you do when you do anything over there, and just like Siri is over here. So what I wish... Not saying this is going to happen. Maybe. I don't know. I used to wish things would happen way in the past that are now happening with iPhone. So maybe it will happen. But I wish they would third-party API that out, so that if you had some other voice assistant, be it Cortana, be it Google Assistant, whatever it is, let me make that the default. There's no reason technically they can't. It's purely a, not spite, but, you know, Apple doesn't want to have Google's Assistant as the main thing. I totally get it. They got their own branded deal. I totally get it. But I kind of wish they'd just do it. And I think that would make the phone even... It's already my favorite phone. Just give me one more reason to like it.
Yeah, I get it. They'll never do that, Scott. I hate to make it to you. They never will.
They probably won't. But you know what? I used to think they weren't going to do that with other stuff, like on the lock screen. They wouldn't. Back in the day, you couldn't reply directly to a third-party app if you wanted to from the lock screen. Or you couldn't have integrated... You know, apps using like 1Password across different apps and things like that. Like, they've slowly let go of some of that grip, you know? In fact, the iPhone's kind of the story of that. How long till they quit trying to control that? How long till they quit trying to control that? When can I delete the default apps? Like, all of those questions seem like they were no's for a very long time. So I'm not 100% convinced this can't happen. I think it can, but I'm not holding my breath or anything.
Okay. I am impressed with your optimism and your belief in Apple. But for now, it's really not that. I mean, I have the Assistant app. It's like the one where my thumb touches right here. If you have 3D touch, you hard press and it says talk to your assistant. So it's really just like one more press that it is the home button. Of course, you know, and if you want to just use voice and say, you know, hey, whatever, open my assistant, and then you can use it through that. But then you also can't, you know, I can't unlock or lock my doors. I can't turn it off and on my lights. All those things that are integrated into Siri, you can't do. But yeah, I think more people, I think as a public service announcement to you people out there, download Google Assistant, try it. It wasn't great on the first day. No. It took a while for it to get better, but it's really good for directions and just, you know, when you want to figure out who, you know, if there were any TV shows on regular networks that had Indian stars in them, for example. If I had my phone here, yeah, I could have asked that before.
And a friendly reminder, for whatever reason, Google makes really nice iOS apps. Sometimes they're better than the Android versions that they have on their flagship platform. I don't know why that is or what's going on there, but they have a team over there that makes great iOS apps. And this is no exception to that. And people should totally try it. 300,000 of you is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's third-party data. We don't know for sure. But no. Yeah. Well, after the break, we're still going to be talking about Google. Google Glass is back, and I dare you to call the factory workers and doctors who use it glass holes. I dare you. But first, let's take a minute to thank Ring, the sponsor of this episode. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer. Today, over a million people use this amazing product. It's called the Ring Video Doorbell. If you haven't heard us talk about it before, it will help you protect your home. Ring knows home security begins at the front door. But it doesn't end there. That's why they're extending the same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. It's just like a floodlight. You need a floodlight, and it has a camera. Ring's video doorbell is just like the floodlight cam, but without the light. The floodlight cam is a motion-activated camera and a floodlight that connects to your phone. It has HD video and two-way audio. It also lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. You can see and speak to visitors. Even set off an alarm right from your phone with Ring's floodlight cam. When things go bump in the night, you will immediately know what it is. Whether you're inside, down the street, in another country, you'll know. Whether you're home or away, the Ring floodlight cam lets you keep an eye on your home. Ring floodlight cams offer the ultimate in home security with high visibility floodlights and powerful HD cameras that put security in your hands. That's why it was named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. Monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit. All kits include a Ring video doorbell and your choice of either 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams. Connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. With Ring, you are always home. So right now, if you're watching or listening, you can save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. All you have to do is go to ring.com/TNT. That's ring.com/TNT. Don't forget to add that TNT stands for Tech News Today. That's the way they know that we sent you to them. And of course, we thank Ring for their support. Google Glass is back, but not for checking your Insta feed from your glasses. The newly revamped Glass Enterprise Edition is designed for the non-information workers among us, meaning people who still work with people and things instead of in front of a screen, hands on a keyboard all day. So we're talking about doctors, factory workers, automobile assemblers, makers of agricultural equipment and others. Scott, what do you make of this new chapter in the life of this much derided product?
Well, I knew back when they were talking about this going away, there was a lot of talk of back to the drawing board, we're starting over and stuff. And I didn't believe it. I never bought that. I think Google is willing. They're the kind of company that's willing to say, all right, we're going to try this. And to a certain point, it's pretty close to a retail product, but we still, you know, need to iterate and figure this thing out. And they went pretty far with that. People could buy it. They could wear it, gained a weird reputation. I think they needed that feedback to kind of know what the reception would be. And I think rightly they said, well, time to turn inward and work on it some more. I think it's the perfect application for it, at least to start. I've always felt like this and other AR initiatives and products out there are stepping stones to something great one day. These are big, imagine the big, heavy, small screened black and white laptops of yesteryear that were not convenient, that were not battery efficient, that were not any of those things. But they were important stepping stones toward the future. And the future that we have now is pretty incredible with 15 hours of battery life and super thinness and incredible OS capabilities. And they're great. Like, I don't see any reason why AR, Google Glass among them, can't, you know, find a foothold and develop over time. But we are 10 years away, in my opinion, from where we really want to be, which is a place of size is going to matter. It's going to be real small. And it's going to be hard to detect, and they're going to be ubiquitous, and they're going to be really inexpensive, and we're going to have people using some kind of AR or some kind of device like what Google Glass is trying to do, and it will be like cell phones, and we'll be past all of the awkward stages. We won't be carrying around giant bricks anymore. VR, AR, all of that stuff is going to get to this place, and when we get there, it's going to be a really great place to be, but there has to be these stepping stones. So I think it's brilliant that A, they didn't can it, and B, the way this becomes a stepping stone is that it's not for you on the bus. It's for a doctor in a research lab. It's for a heavy machinery technician in a factory. It's somebody who's working in, you know, really strange conditions with really interesting equipment and needs this kind of help and assistance. So it's a great place to start getting your feet wet and to see this grow and evolve. I think it eventually, though, ends up, Megan, in my hands, in your hands, and we end up with, you know, we end up with consumer products that help us in our everyday. But we're not there yet, so why not aim it at a place that actually can use it right now and then iterate from there?
One wonders why they didn't do that first. I mean, I hear what you're saying, that they just wanted to get the public's reaction, but it seemed so weird that they were. I mean, we have a picture. Stephen Levy put these two pictures side by side in his Wired piece today, where it was Sergey Brin and Diane von Furstenberg. If you scroll down a little bit to this picture of them standing, yeah, right there on the left. You know, it was just like, let's make this fashionable item. You know, this woman that makes dresses. And then versus on the right is what the way they're trying to sell it today, like a factory worker. Like, is it just that we are living in a different time than we were 3 years ago when they were trying to push it as a fashionable item. We are more, I mean, we do live in a different nation where there's a lot of populist voices being heard for the first time. People who feel like those, you know, pictures of Sergey and Diane von Furstenberg were passing them by, you know, and then, so I think that that's something to it. I think that they are still maybe playing to what they think the public wants, and maybe the public wants to know that their factory jobs are still, you know, going to be not taken by robots.
Well, 2 weeks ago at my Nerdtacular event we hold here in Salt Lake City, somebody brought a HoloLens with them. And while that's nothing like in terms, well, you know, that and Google Glass couldn't be more different in a lot of ways. But despite its limitations, I was very impressed with it. And after using it, I went, okay, I get it. There will come a time where we have full field of vision and we'll be able to augment our realities in a way that is useful across the board, from video games all the way up to super important high-tech surgery, whatever it is. And I'm convinced of that. The question is, when you're at Google and you live and work and eat and stay and sleep in a campus that is always thinking of the next thing you're going to do, whether it's talking to a computer and getting the results you want to whatever other Google thing is going on, I think it's easy to get in that bubble and forget what the practical everyday person is going to do. And I think that's where the mistake was made. I think that they just got so excited about the potential of the technology that they tried to apply it so fast and so quick to a hipster generation who they assumed would love to have at least one more piece of hardware hanging off of them that told them everything that was going on in the world. And we weren't even sure as a public if watches that are smart are, if we're ready for that or not. We're still not sure if we're ready for that or not. So at least on a mass market scale. So I think this is them. I mean, I wasn't in there. I didn't have any of these meetings, but I get the impression this is them stepping back a little and going, all right, you guys, calm down for a second. We got a really cool idea. It's a pretty neat tech, but we're kind of a solution without a problem. Mm-hmm. So let's put it in areas where perhaps those problems exist and the solution will be obvious and will grow and will change and we'll know what our solution is, you know, down the road. So that's where I think they're at. And I applaud it. I think it's the right way to do this. And I'm with you that maybe they should have started there, but I think they were so stoked. Like that airplane thing at that IO conference that one time, it's ridiculous. It's the over the top, dumbest thing I ever saw. And it made me realize, well, they don't really know what we want out of this, do they? Because I'm not jumping out of plane so I can go speak at a conference. And they just got a little over their own head. So this is a good thing. This is them stepping back, getting a little bit more real. And, you know, they'll probably make some money in the meantime, even if this goes nowhere. Even if you and I don't end up with something Google Glass related, it won't happen. Here's one thing they do have to do, though. Change the stupid name. Saying Google Glass is a pain in the butt, and everyone knows it, and they all know it. I swear they all know it up there in Redmond. If you say that term, Silicon Valley, if you say that term, it's annoying and you want to kill each other when you say it. Mm-hmm. Google Glass is hard to say. It doesn't roll off the tongue. It needs a better name.
Well, I think that Google just in general has something against hiring brand naming people, because all of the names of everything that they do, aside from the name Google itself, are horrible. From mm-hmm. Alphabet to Allo to Hangouts, everything.
There's something about them. They're just bad. They're not good at it.
Right. And hit me up, Google. I got lots of good ideas for you. So Burke also asked a good question, which was what has changed in the device itself? They've made hardware improvements. They've made design improvements. It's more light, weight, and more comfortable, they say, for long-term wear. So, it's doctors. And this is the other thing that I found so fascinating about this, that there is just really a divide. There are so many information workers, and I count you and I as one of them. So even though we do podcasts, a large part of our day is spent in front of the computer with our hands on the keyboard, right? We're not spending a lot of time with people and things, but then there's a whole lot of other jobs. And, you know, Burke, who's sitting here, who's the studio engineer, like he is one of the people that spends his time with things. You know, he's climbing ladders and he's adjusting cameras, and it would be way more useful probably for him to have maybe a device like this, not necessarily in our situation because we're a small company with not that many people. And if he shouts, we can hear him. But you know, if he needs to look at a how-to manual of something, like he can just call it up and see it while he's standing on the top of the ladder adjusting the camera, as opposed to having to come down and look at something, you know, things like that. I can really see, or a doctor, like, who's got me cut open and reaching around in my organs. You know, it would be great to have someone else, you know, a more professional doctor somewhere else, say like, oh yeah, he could see what he's seeing, and he takes a look at my organs and says whatever he might say about my organs. So
that's a fine liver you got there, they'd say.
Yeah. But like the idea that someone else can see what you're seeing too, which is that's part of our new economy, which is, you know, that there doesn't everybody doesn't have to know everything anymore. There could always be an expert, like a super person who you can call in and say, oh yes, that's how you do that. It doesn't have to be, everyone doesn't have to have all these specific expertise.
I could use a super person, but I'll say this too. If I this is what I have little doubt about. When it becomes small enough and unobtrusive enough, we're all going to want this. I want something that is telling my eyes I'm seeing a thing that I need to think about or look up. I need to be able to go, shoot, I don't remember what model this is, while I'm on the phone with somebody who's asking me what model my TV is, and the only way to see it is to go around the back and look at the serial number. I would love to be able to just say it off phone and have in my eyes suddenly see the serial number for the TV I've got, and a 3D representation of my TV that I might be able to reach out and twist around, because hey, who knows where this tech goes. We're going to get there to the point that it's not even part of glasses anymore. It's not a little thing you have to attach to your glasses. It's not such a modular beast. It will be implanted or somehow, I don't know, transmitted to my eyes. I realize I have no bridge for how we're going to get to this tech. But when that happens, when we get to that place, this will be everywhere. And Google will have an advantage because they already kind of, they're doing their homework. They're starting early. They're going to get there before anybody else. So I think that this is something that's worth them investing in and spending some time with. Because one day this will be the way we do things. I'm convinced of it. It may not look just like that. It may have some twists that I'm not thinking of, but we are heading to a place where we're not looking down at a screen. We are just looking straight ahead, and the world is being augmented to our needs.
Well, will Google get there first or will Apple get there first? I mean, with ARKit, and they're putting these, you know, devices into everyone's hands. So you now have like the doctors who have an iPhone and the factory workers who have an iPhone, and I have an iPhone and you have an iPhone. And now we can all use this AR, and there are already so many developers working on all kinds of things, very specific. And it's not a device on our face. Like, that was where I see Apple. I mean, you're saying like we in the future need to have a device that's not going to be on our face. But I think Apple is really getting us acclimated to this before they present the device on our face.
Well, it's very tool oriented, their approach. It's like, well, I've got my phone or my iPad here and I can hold it up and look real quick and put it back and then do this other thing, look at it. Oh, I need to move over. Okay, cool. I'll, you know, and you're, it's a, that's a usable, that's a model that makes sense. And I totally get that. And I'm with you. But again, I'm only with you sort of in the short term, as much as I'm with Google Glass in the short term. I think these are both stepping stones to something else. I don't know what form those are going to take, and I try not to get too futuristic when thinking about it. But I really think, you know, in the same way that phones and their ubiquity now are based on thinness and inexpensiveness and access to the internet and ease of use and wireless connectivity wherever you are, all those things matter now. But we didn't think about all that stuff 20 years ago. We just thought we needed to make phone calls. So this will do something like that too. We'll get to a place where we didn't even know we needed it for a bunch of things. And then we'll find those things. And then it will become, you know, part of our lives. And probably to the point, I mean, imagine if I didn't have any eyewear on at all. It was just part of my vision. Well, I'm done. Then all I have to do is make phone calls with my voice and it picks up a call and talks to somebody. I can see video of their screen and they can see video of me, and we're all going to die in, you know, intersections and stuff trying to cross the street and stuff. But let's forget about that for now. The technology itself is heading that direction one way or the other. So whether it's Google, whether it's Apple, or it's some other company we haven't even heard of yet, probably not Leapfrog or not Leapfrog. What are they called?
Magic Leap,
because they never seem to show anything. I get annoyed with them, but but it's going to be somebody, and whether it's any of these companies we already know or not, it doesn't matter so much to me as that does feel like the future of communication. How we get there, I don't know, but I like both approaches. I do like ARKit in that I will be using that as a consumer, whereas Google Glass will continue to be this weird thing I don't really get to have access to for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and Microsoft too. I mean, you started talking about HoloLens as well. I want holograms. I am all in on holograms. I want to be able to say, like, just do this with my hand and there's a screen there, and you know, it'll show me everything I need to do, and I can just then swipe it away.
Yeah, it really impressed me, that thing. Other than its field of view, that thing's still kind of a problem for it, but what it was doing, if you take into account some of the technical weaknesses that you can't quite get over right now, really impressive. But I'm not wearing that thing at the mall. I'm not going to drive anywhere with that thing on. I'm barely going to do it with Google Glass or an equivalent. They're goofy and weird. And we are still flesh and blood people that have certain social mores that we like to adhere to. And over time, some of that gets overcome. I remember when having a cell phone out in public seemed weird. I remember when talking on Bluetooth wireless headsets, while still annoying, was pretty weird. It's not weird anymore. So we also have to get to that place, whatever that is. And right now, I mean, maybe this is one where Apple's got the right idea from a consumer standpoint. Holding up a phone over something is not strange to see people doing that. So immediately that kind of AR is going to be accessible and quick and easy and not weird. But me having some sort of headset on and scanning people and things and areas is freaking weird.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Burke says having a robot body will be our AR. So yeah, exactly.
Burke has always said, he's said this for you. Oh, look, he's got a little sign. Burke is never wrong. I just want to put that out there. I've never known him to be wrong. So none of his predictions have happened yet, but that doesn't mean he's wrong. It just means we're not enough yet.
Right. And yesterday he asked for the chainsaw arm emoji, and I expect that in Unicode 10.5 probably. So okay, I got some feedback from Bo from Nashville. He writes, okay, so I got to set this up first. Yesterday, I talked about apps that let you remote start your car from your Apple Watch, which is very cool. I don't need it here, but you probably need it in your cold climate where, you know, it's snowing outside and you want to start your car before you go out. But they also let you remote stop your car. And I was very confused about why you would want to remote stop your car. I guess if like you want to be in the heat and then you go inside to turn it off, I'm not sure. But Bo says one reason to remote stop your car is if you remotely start it, but your plans changed or got canceled. I can see why it'd be helpful to have a way to stop the car in that case. I guess, yeah, if you are going to have something that starts your car, you should have something that stops your car. Do you remote start your car, Scott?
I don't. I mean, we do get winters here and we get snow and stuff, but it's never so bad that I have ever really had to worry about it. And because I have my own home studio, I'm often not driving in the winter. Really have to go to too many places, but in the summer, well, like right now it's 102 degrees outside. It's very, very hot this time of year, unusually anyway. And that's actually more of the time I'll use it because I've got my car parked someplace. I would love to get the AC going before I get into that 110 degree space and want to die while I'm in there. So yeah, I'm all for this. Love the remote idea.
And TNT's fan of the day is Bean, who says, watching the hashtag Evo 2017 Marvel versus Capcom 3 finals and TNT at the same time. And I think Megan should try Street Fighter. She can win. I'm willing to try anything once. How can I play this Street Fighter he speaks of, Scott?
All you need to do is go buy a copy for your PlayStation 4. Do you have a PlayStation 4?
No.
Do you have an Xbox One?
No, I have a Mac.
You have a Mac. You might. You know, I think you're hosed. You need
Apple TV. Apple TV.
No, you're still hosed. Although there is some weird championship edition thing that's coming out on iOS that it's not going to be a competition level version of Street Fighter, but it does look kind of interesting. But Evo was huge this last couple of weeks. People really into it. So I think you should make some changes in your life and become the next great contender in Street Fighter and Street Fighter versus Capcom. I think that's a great idea.
I have a Surface book that Leo lent me. Can I play it on that?
Yeah, I think you can get Steam has a version. I don't know if it's that version, but they've got versions of Street Fighter. They have Street Fighter 5 on there, which is the most recent version of the straight up Street Fighter game series. So yeah, you could. You need a controller though. You don't want to do it with a keyboard.
Okay.
So like an Xbox 360 or Xbox One controller, actually any controller would work. But yeah, this is your chance. This is your time to shine, Megan. I'm super stoked for you.
Well, if Bean, our fan of the day, says I should and you say I should, I don't need any more advice. Except for Evo, that doesn't stand for extra virgin olive oil, does it?
No, it does not. In fact, I'm not even sure what it stands for. I've never known, but I love that particular competition. You'll never see a more fierce esport in your life. Okay. Like it is something else to watch two dudes in a chair go at it in the finals in that game is like nothing you've ever seen. So we just got to get you into the minor leagues, okay. Work you up the chain. You'll be the biggest hit ever. Watch.
All right. Well, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we are going to find it. We are not done talking about robots yet. Twitter user Bilal Faruqi says the security robot at his office building in D.C. had had enough and decided to drown himself in the decorative fountain that he was in charge of protecting. We were promised flying cars, Bilal said. Instead, we got suicidal robots. Now, what do you think, Scott? Do you think this is in response to everyone talking about Elon Musk's fear of AI or what?
That guy almost got 300,000 likes and 150,000 retweets. Crazy.
No, just by taking a picture outside his office window.
I think it's just once again proof that stuff's not nearly as scary as we think it is. And most of the time they're kind of dopey. And if they're not running properly, sometimes they'll fall into ponds. So make a wish, I guess. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do when a robot falls in a pond, but it feels like you should make a wish or something like that.
Well, I mean, I think that it really is one of those typical robot problems. Like there were just stairs. Why there were stairs leading into the fountain, I am still unclear about that. But like robots don't do stairs. Most robots don't do stairs. I think Boston Dynamics has some stair climbing robots. But yeah, these are Nightscape robots. They said this was an isolated incident. They're, for now, all of their robots aren't ending it. But Nightscape was the same company who had the robot that ran into the toddler, the security robot. So, yeah, and got pushed over by a drunk frat guy.
Small steps, baby steps we're making here. No reference to the toddler, but baby steps in this technology. It's like we're going to get there eventually where we can trust these things. They can wander around us in public and take care of a lot of the things that we don't want to do anymore. But until then, you're going to get one in the drink once in a while. You're going to have one run over your kid. It's fine. Just, you know, count yourself lucky. They're not taking anything over. They're too dumb to take us over. It's when they're really efficient that we should start worrying. And they're just not that yet. So it's fine.
They're not. The AI is really efficient. So once we really combine all the most efficient AI with the best robots, that's keep the two apart. That's what I say.
Yeah. Don't ever let them make themselves. In other words, the smartest AI, let's say Elon Musk or whoever, somebody at Google makes the most incredible AI of all time. Super AI, as the kids are fond of saying today. That's great, but do not let them be in charge of the factories that build the actual mobile robots. Then you're okay. If they're just these dumb robots dudes are making, you can put a super AI inside of those. Who cares? They'll still fall over and not be great. It's like me in basketball. I understand the game. I'm a pretty smart guy, but don't put me on the court. You're all going to lose. So it's like that. Just don't let them make the robots themselves. That's when we have trouble. When we start automating the creation of robots and other AIs, that's all the red flags. Everything up to that, who cares? It's still us just being dumb humans. It's fine.
But that's what AI is, right? I mean, that is what AI is. Like being able to then do, like we're not just teaching a thing how to do a thing. We're teaching a thing to learn how to do other things. So how do you stop it?
I don't know. There's probably not a way. I mean, I have a fairly optimistic view of the future, especially when it comes to technology. This is a hard one to answer because if we do too good of a job at building a thing that can then learn for itself, we are basically creating life, and it opens up all kinds of science fiction style questions, but they're becoming more and more real, or the potential is becoming more and more real as we move forward. So it's one I have a hard time answering in a very optimistic way. I mean, it may be that we just have to have safeguards, and those safeguards are things that put certain limits on certain kinds of behaviors or something, but we are going to have to start having those conversations. If they are self-learning, will they learn to have a conscience? Will some of them not learn to have one? Will they be defective like we are? Will they have the equivalent of mental illness? Will they, combine their forces and decide, well, they are superior, therefore we are not, therefore the law of, survivability means they go and we stay. Like there's a lot of those questions that sound kind of silly on the face of them, but we're now getting to a place where we need to kind of start asking those questions. And people are, smart people are. Bill Gates asks those questions and says we need to be careful. And Elon Musk says he's the thing that scares him the most in the world is super AI. And Stephen Hawking says we've got to be careful, guys. Like, we just don't go too fast. Let's walk, not run. Let's figure this out slowly. So if those guys are saying stuff, if they're throwing out warnings, I think it's time to maybe take that stuff seriously. But I'm not that worried. It's fine. It mostly just plays my music and cooks my food. And what else do I need?
Exactly. Well, Burke, who is always right, has some final words on this topic. Stairs are humanity's only hope for survival. Amen, Burke.
You know, he's not wrong. If we put enough stairs everywhere, those robots will have no chance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So escalators, no. Moving sidewalks, no. Stairs are our future.
Yep. Love it.
Well, Scott, once again, it was a pleasure to spend this time with you. I think we might have asked more questions than we answered. But tell everyone where the best place to find you. Scott Johnson on Twitter. You have the Frog Pants Twitch network. Is there any place else? Where's the best place to find all the podcasts that you do and all your comics and everything?
Well, all the stuff you may want to find, including we have a bunch of archival photos and video and stuff going up now from the Nerdtacular convention, which happened a couple of weeks ago. Big success. Totally fun. That's always fun to look at. So you can check that out there as well. But it's frogpants.com for all of it. And if you like daily shows, you probably do because you're listening to this or watching this and you hear it every day and you'd like to hear what Megan and Jason have going on. Might I suggest another daily routine you might want to get on into? And that is our award winning. We've won some awards. It's not that big a deal. But our award-winning morning show that airs every Monday through Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific live at frogpants.tv. And that's called The Morning Stream. And I've been hosting that since 2011. We're up to 1,303 episodes or something. And we do it every day. So if you are into that, want to be around a great chat room and a bunch of friends of this network of Twit, come check us out. We're over there at frogpants.com/TMS. And as always, thanks for having me on, Megan. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much, Scott. We'll see you soon.
Yep.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. That is 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV. And subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. You can find all the ways there. And if you want to tweet at me to tell me what EVO stands for, because even Burke didn't know. He thinks maybe it's short for evolution. I don't know. I'm at Megan Maroney. Thank you to our technical director, Brian. Thank you to Burke for always being right about everything. Thank you to Kevin for editing the show. Or Brian. Are you editing the show today, Brian? Oh, thank you to Kevin then. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see you tomorrow.